John Vernon will be presenting today. He is a recent graduate from Azusa Pacific, and he's presenting today on personality type, anxiety, and sleep. I'll give you a wave at 5 minutes.
Cool, thank you. So, as you said, I'll be presenting on stress, sleep, and coping mechanisms. In the pamphlet, it says personality, anxiety, and sleep. We recently changed the title, but it still involves personality, so in case you're wondering. So, in the past couple weeks, I've been like anticipating this, building up, trying to like figure out what exactly I was going to say, and I encountered a lot of people that were stressed out. And it's really interesting because it's a type of stress that I have never experienced, but I'm sure one day I will, and it was the stress of having children, specifically very young children. I was on a flight to Seattle, and there was a very rambunctious three-year-old sitting next to me with his dad, and his dad ordered 2 beers for lunch on the plane. And I can say that's probably not a good way of coping with stress, but it seemed to work for him. So,
did he drink them or the three-year-old?
He drank them both. I actually thought at first he was ordering one for himself and one for me, and I was like, oh, that's really nice. But then he just downed them both. I was like, wow, all right, that's cool. So, introduction. The purpose of this study is to investigate the correlations of stress levels and quality and quantity of sleep. And it's also going to try and examine some of the correlations between sleep quality, stress, in relation to lifestyle choices. So the lifestyle choices are more of the coping mechanisms for stress in order to better improve sleep quality and quantity. And so this study is important because it will further develop the field of science studying the correlations between stress and sleep quality. And so we're also trying to study the correlations between spirituality and sleep quality, which I think is what makes this study a little bit different from the other stress and sleep studies in the scientific field, because we're trying to correlate some of the Christian principles of spirituality with into it to see if those can be coping mechanisms of dealing with stress to improve sleep quality. So the spirituality part is trying to have a holistic understanding to life, and specifically in this study surrounding sleep health. So some of the research questions that we're kind of exploring are what happens when the evolutionary fight or flight response to a threat stimulus is suppressed. And so maybe in this suppressed, we kind of mean not really dealt with or not responded to. So with both fighting and flight, there is this exertion of energy, there is exercise involved, and it's dealing with an increase of adrenaline due to a threat stimulus, where in the past it might have been something physically dangerous, whereas now it might be other types of stress in everyday lives due to societal changes. So how do adrenaline, serotonin, and dopamine levels relate to mental states of anxiety and serenity of restfulness? And then what factors stimulate and regulate adrenaline, serotonin, and dopamine levels in the body? We'll also be looking at what are the connections between levels of stress and sleep quality and quantity, what lifestyle choices and practices can contribute to reducing anxiety, improving sleep quality and quantity, including some of those spiritual practices, maybe like prayer or meditation. And then how does the accumulation of sleep debt contribute to anxiety and serenity restfulness? So sleep debt, not getting the enough sleep that you need for several days in a row, and then having that debt, and then having like a very long sleep in order to make up for that. So our hypothesis is that stress levels affect sleep quality. In regards to the construct's perceived stress and personality type, we predict that there will be an inverse correlation between stress levels and sleep quality and neuroticism and sleep quality. So neuroticism is kind of bringing that personality into that equation. So the objectives are to find the correlations that contribute to sleep disturbance within individuals. And sort of an objective is to bring in the Christian holistic understanding of the negative and positive impacts of our lifestyle and how that correlates to our health and sleep health. And so we're hoping to further elaborate the research field of sleep quality in relation to health and spirituality. So the research methods that we're going to be using, we haven't been able to collect data yet because not everyone has been able to obtain certifications to be able to do the data collection. So that phase is still undergoing. Hopefully this upcoming fall, it's going to begin. So the research methods, basically we're going to be using a group of students from a psychology class at Azusa Pacific University. And we're going to give them a series of surveys and questionnaires that are surrounding sleep quality, personality type, and lifestyle. So we'll be using the Big Five personality test to try and understand their personalities, and then also use the Pittsburgh Sleep Quality Index, which is used to do sort of like a self-assessment of sleep quality, which includes things like how long does it take for you to fall asleep, so sleep initiation, do you wake up a lot during the night, are you a restful sleeper, how many hours do you get, things like that. So it's just sort of understanding the person's quality of sleep each night. And then we'll also be using a sleep disturbance application on the phone, which measures restlessness that may not really be perceived during a person's sleep that they know. And so we're going to do those questionnaires and try to incorporate things like exercise, meditation. We're sort of going to try to see if we can do diet, which would be really interesting. And so, like I said, that'll be done through a psychology course at Azusa Pacific. So what we do have is a literature review. So that's sort of the meat of what I'm going to be presenting today. And some of this is pretty interesting stuff. So first, it's stress. And as you can imagine, higher levels of physiological and psychological stress increase sleep disturbance among individuals because stress causes a hyperarousal, which is a direct contributing factor to insomnia. So higher stress levels and lifestyle do affect sleep quality. And I don't know, I mean, science people here, I don't know if you guys ever get stressed out or not. I know I do. Neuroticism and agreeableness. These are two parts of the Big Five personality tests that we've been exploring a little bit through scientific literature to try and understand them. So people who score high on neuroticism experience poor sleep quality. This is both sleep initiation and then restlessness during the night. And a lot of this has to do with being worrisome, like thinking about having anxiety in your mind about different things in your life. So it could be things like school or work, family issues, relationships, social factors that keep people up because they keep on thinking about these different things. Finances is a big one that people think about a lot. So that has a negative impact on sleep quality.
Would you define neuroticism?
Neuroticism is anxiety. So like mental anxiety, stress, worrisomeness. I don't know if that's a word, worrisomeness, probably not. So on the contrary, agreeableness, like the opposite, people who score highly on agreeableness experience higher sleep quality. And when I was sort of writing this out, I kind of thought of Philippians 4:4-8, which I don't know exactly, but kind of paraphrasing is rejoice in the Lord. I'll say it again, rejoice always. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not worry about anything, but through everything, through prayer and petition, present your requests to God. And the God of peace and understanding will be with you always. So even Paul is kind of saying, don't lose sleep over it. There's no need to worry. So, yeah, even the Bible is kind of saying, don't really worry about things, it's okay. But people are still very neurotic. So neuroticism is also correlated with emotional control. And emotional control is a person's basically ability to, I mean, kind of like it sounds, control their emotions. So being able to relax when you're stressed out, being able to reduce your anger or increase in joy or happiness, having serenity, being at peace. And so emotional control can interact with sleep disturbance, mostly with sleep initiation. I'm not 100% sure why it's sleep initiation rather than sleep quantity and then the sleep quality part, like while you're actually asleep. But that will be an interesting thing to explore. So the third one in the literature review is meditation. And this, I'm not sure if it's a Buddhist form of meditation or a Hindu form of meditation, but the meditation in this one includes clearing your mind and focusing on breathing in order to relax yourself and dissipate some anxieties you may have in your mind. And it has, the research that we found shows that it increases the quality of sleep physiologically, and it actually increases melatonin levels when people meditate. It regulates the parasympathetic nervous system, which regulates resting periods, and then it reduces sympathetic nervous system activity, which is a stimulating part of your nervous system. And so, yeah, it increases levels of melatonin, which I actually was very surprised to find this out, because I thought that meditation would be more of a psychological thing, where you're clearing your mind and being able to calm your mind of anxieties and worries, but it actually is also physiological in increasing melatonin. And that may just be because the research methods in this study weren't particularly clear. Maybe it's because they were meditating at night in the dark, because melatonin is produced in the dark. And so if someone was like meditating during the day, maybe melatonin wasn't being produced, but at night it was. I'm not 100% sure. But I found that to be very interesting. And number four, exercise. So exercise does, there are two main things that contribute to sleep quality with exercise. Number one is light exposure. A lot of times when people are exercising, they're doing it outside. So when the sun is out and you're exercising outside, there's more light exposure, and that helps to regulate your circadian rhythms and helps to regulate your biological clock. Because blue light, being outside, is a stimulant, so it helps you to stay awake during the day. And then exercise is also beneficial psychologically, because it sort of helps out reducing your stress levels from reducing adrenaline levels. So we're also sort of looking at exercise for that first research question that we were talking about with the fight or flight stimulus threat, because then you will be burning off a lot of those adrenaline levels, which is pretty interesting. And so another thing that I found out about light exposure is that there's blue light and red light. Blue light is a stimulant which keeps you from falling asleep at night, whereas red light is more neutral with that. So one thing that I learned was that computers and iPhones actually have blue light. So when you use a computer and iPhone late at night, then you're actually getting stimulated, so it's harder to fall asleep. You'll have sleep initiation problems. And this is kind of funny, because I was thinking about my freshman year roommates. I would wake up at like 3 in the morning, and they would be just laying in bed with their phones right in front of their faces. And I always ask, like, why are you guys on your phones? Why don't you go to sleep? Like, oh, well, we like aren't tired, so we just stay on our phones. Like, well, maybe your phones are keeping you awake. But there are actually a few applications you can get that will change the blue light to more orangish, reddish light on your computer, so that it'll help to lessen those sleep initiation problems. And number five, caffeine. I'm sure that we all can relate to this. I don't know about anyone here, but I had coffee last night in the Hammer Center and did not help with my sleep. So caffeine, I don't know, especially derived from coffee, maybe coffee is just stronger, but coffee has more of an adverse effect on sleep quality than tea does. So caffeine obviously negatively affects sleep initiation as well as sleep duration. Generally, caffeine effects are going to be strongest for 3 to 5 hours. After that, it starts to dissipate a lot. So maybe take that into consideration when having coffee or soda. And so caffeine and coffee tends to have a stronger effect in sleep quality than caffeine from tea. So the caffeine section is kind of part of a larger diet section that we're exploring. And diet in general doesn't necessarily have a whole lot of effects on sleep quality, but there are particular things in your diet that do. So caffeine, sugar, things like that, tobacco is another thing that interrupts sleep quality and reduces sleep initiation, there'll be more problems with it. And there was one thing that I was researching, because I've heard a lot of like urban legends, you know, growing up, my mom would always say, drink a glass of milk before going to sleep and it'll help you sleep. So I wanted to research that and see if that was actually something that helped. And I found out that there's two types of milk. There's regular milk and then there's melatonin-rich milk. So if you milk a cow at night, there's actually more melatonin in the milk, and so that will help you sleep, which I did not know. So that's really interesting. You can get melatonin-rich milk from milks from cows milked at night, which is pretty interesting. So sneak up on a cow while it's sleeping. I guess. Yeah, I don't know. That's kind of weird. So some of the additional questions that we're hoping to explore a little bit is, how does exercise relate to adrenaline levels in relation to stress, and how does this relate to a fight or flight response to traumatic experience? And then how does serotonin levels in the body relate to quantity of sleep, and how does exercise relate to serotonin levels in relation to stress? And yeah, that's about all we have so far. That's it.
You mentioned that in order to actually conduct a study, there are requirements that you have to be cleared for, certified to do. What are some of those requirements?
Okay, so every intern, when you do a research study and you're collecting data on subjects in an institution, at least that is a Pacific university, you have to get certifications within basically rules of conduct. About how to interact with the students, what sorts of things you're allowed to test, what sorts of things you're not. Confidentiality is a big one, so we're actually doing like surveys, asking personal questions, things like that, and so we have to like know all these different rules about confidentiality, about what sorts of things are okay to ask, what sorts of things are not okay to ask, and then just being able to conduct the data collection. So it's basically like a little test booklet that you study all of these rules. It's kind of like getting your driver's license. And then you do a series of quizzes based on each section to get the certification. So all the interns have to get the certification, and then also the principal investigator, the faculty member, also has to get the certification. Yeah.
Can you describe maybe a situation or two that would be evolutionary fight or flight situation where my response to that was suppressed in modern life?
In modern life, okay. That's an interesting one. So I think that in modern life, most of the like threat stimulus or what gives us stress or what is traumatic to us is often in social context, educational context, and like things like that, work context. So maybe something that would be stressful to, off the top of my head, being a college student, is finals coming up. And so that's gonna produce a lot of stress in me. And just like trying to deal with that, some of the things that you can do is exercise in order to try and reduce that stress, clear your mind. Another thing for more of an adrenaline-based one maybe is seeing some sort of traumatic experience. Like one time I was at a park and I saw these two girls, like 6-year-old girls, fall off their bike, and this girl got her foot caught inside the spokes, and like it was pretty bad. And I had a lot of adrenaline going, and I was pretty jittered up for quite a while after. So being able to sort of burn off that adrenaline, doing something with that jitteriness, that excitement, like oftentimes doing something that is involving exercise is going to burn that off.
Actually, first of all, I can address that question. So the fight, flight, and then freeze is the other option. Mm-hmm. So the common place where you would see it is in childhood abuse, where fight and flight is not an option, so that response would be suppressed and then freeze, and it can become a form of dissociation, which then carries on for that life. But I was going to ask you, I'm just wondering if you haven't considered looking at mindfulness as opposed to meditation or in addition to meditation, because that's what's being used more commonly for sleep disorders.
Okay, yeah, that would be a good thing to explore.
The other thing you might be interested in is the idea of emotional styles, Davidson's idea, as opposed to personality types, which can be, to me, I find it actually a lot more helpful than spiritual.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
Could you just clarify a bit of the mindfulness meditation? What's the difference that you're getting at there?
In 10 seconds or less? mindfulness does have some origins in relationship to, so let me clarify, there's different aspects of mindfulness. There's mindfulness meditation, which has more the Buddhist kind of, you know, meditation and mindfulness. And then there's mindfulness, which is just the exercise of being aware of where you're at in daily life. Living in the moment is probably the easiest way to describe it. But mindfulness has more recently been sort of clinicalized and divorced from any of its religious origins, and has been found to be very effective for healing a number of stress-related illnesses. Now, there's a question, of course, I think that's interesting in terms of how much it's divorced from its religious origins, but that's that's for another day. So the basic sort of tool of mindfulness is to the idea of non-judgmental awareness. So you just, you know, you can close your eyes, but just being aware of the environment. And if you have thoughts going by, you say, that's okay, the thought's just going by, because so often people will tend to, you know, get sidetracked with the thoughts. So it's just being, it's a heightened awareness. It's not a different from a relaxation exercise. It's a state of heightened awareness.
But isn't that meditation too?
It can be, they can be related, but mindfulness is a bit more specific.
Yeah, it's almost like stoicism a little bit, where you're aware of the situations, but you're not stressing out over the situations.
Right. So yeah. Particularly helpful for anxiety.
Yeah.
Briefly, one more question. What would be, I guess, let's say that you have a lot of trouble with sleep initiation, or restlessness, for instance. What would be a good, like based on what you do in literature review, what would be a good sort of method to try and reverse that? Is like tea instead of coffee, or exercise before bed, or what would be your advice?
So I think that it would be important to be aware of the things that you're doing before going to bed and how you are feeling, both like psychologically, physically, what sorts of things you're feeling, and trying to maybe eliminate some different things of what it might be that's causing your sleep initiation problems. So maybe it's because you're like on your computer or like on your phone, and that light is causing you to be stimulated and have sleep initiation problems. Or maybe it's because you had a like coffee too late or something like that. You could have relaxation teas, which do not have caffeine and help to improve sleep quality. That might help with sleep initiation. For myself, I've found that actually reading books before going to bed helps me to fall asleep faster. I'm not really sure why that is, but it's just helping to focus my mind on something else that's not very stressful. And then, you know, like a page from a book isn't really very bright and keeping me awake. Yeah.
Have you folks given any thought to why neuroticism is correlating with sleep disturbance? And more specifically, what I'm thinking is the measure arises out of the theory that is grounding personality in evolutionary processes. And yet we also find that childhood trauma correlates with neuroticism.
Right.
Because that doesn't have to, sort of genetics versus early experience doesn't have to be either or, but it would lead potentially to differential modeling of how that is flowing through to
definitely
problems.
That would be, yeah, that's definitely a good thing that we should probably specify which direction exactly we're going to be taking with that concept of evolutionary. So whether or not neuroticism is coming from experience or actually from genetics would be good for us to clarify and maybe explore a little bit more.
Any other questions? Comments?
One more small question. Sorry. Didn't ask this one, but are you guys, have you thought of trying to find a relationship between the frequency and or methodology of dreams with anxiety and stress? Or are you not going to go that far?
You know, we haven't thought about that, but I will definitely write it down as a possibility.
Thank you.
Thanks.